This week's episode is sponsored by RLJE Films and their newest release, VFW. Stephen Lang, William Sadler, Martin Cove, and Fred Williamson are in for the fight of their lives in Fangoria's VFW from director Joe Bigas. Now playing in theaters on demand in digital HD. See it on the big screen and own it on Apple TV today.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fangoria. It's 2020 and Fangoria magazine is back on shelves and Fangoria.com is on a mission to bring you even more horror content than ever before. It's a great new decade to be a horror fan. Fangoria.com is your destination for all the horror news of the day, featuring a constant curation of the Fango editorial team's favorite links from across the internet. You'll also find deep dives and daily thoughts from the biggest names in horror, as well as exclusive access to the Fangoria vault. Become a Fangoria Plus member and receive 4 coffee table worthy issues of the magazine, full digital access to Fangoria.com, invitations to special events and screenings, and much, much more. Go to Fangoria.com and become a member today. Use promo code SHOCKWAVES for 15% off right now. Again, that promo code is SHOCKWAVES.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Can you fly, sucker? Fright Rags celebrates the 30th anniversary of Tremors with an all-new collection of officially licensed t-shirts available now. Plus, they've reprinted several of their best-selling designs, now back in stock and shipping immediately. It's available exclusively at fright-rags.com. Also, stay tuned this Monday for the online release of the brand new Slashback video t-shirt featuring artwork by Mark Schoenbeck. Listeners get 10% off their first order with the code WAVES10. That's all at fright-rags.com. Listeners get 10% off their first order with the code WAVES10.
This episode is also brought to you by houseofmysterioussecrets.com, your number one source of horror merchandise for 15 years running. They have everything, toys, apparel, soundtracks, comics, masks, hard-to-find collectibles, and so much more. Their inventory caters to genre fans of all kinds, from classic monsters to 80s B-movies to modern favorites. House of Mysterious Secrets ships worldwide and offers free shipping on all U.S. orders over $65. Where else can you find a Friday the 13th fanny pack? A John Carpenter record, a Suspiria t-shirt, a Monster Squad wallet, a Godzilla hat, and the latest issue of Fangoria all in one place? Head on over to houseofmysterioussecrets.com to see it all for yourself.
Tonight's episode is also brought to you by Diabolik DVD. For almost 20 years, Diabolik DVD has been the source for horror, cult, and weird cinema to customers around the world. Diabolik offers a one-stop shopping experience for all your favorite labels, including Eros, Synapse, Vinegar Syndrome, Severin, Mondo Macabro, Blue Underground, 88, and many more from all corners of the globe. Whether you're looking for the definitive version of Suspiria or trying to upgrade your crusty old DVD of Cannibal Holocaust, Diabolik is owner-operated and the small business choice you have been craving. Shop online now at DiabolikDVD.com.
Welcome to Shockwaves, episode 178. I'm your co-host, Ryan Turk, and I'm joined by Mr. Rob Galuzzo.
Yes, I'm in a safe place, I think.
Rebecca McKendry.
I'm in a happy place, I think.
Elric Kane.
Hi, Ryan. Eye contact.
Ryan's had, Elric's had wine. Yeah. So have I, apparently.
On the soundboard, we got Ernie.
Sup, Ernie? Sup.
Also in the house for the top of this episode, we have a very special guest, because tonight we are recording within the Mystic Museum in Burbank, California, where we have set up shop for Slashback Video, The Beginning. So let's welcome Mr. Eric Wessel, one of the co-owners of Mystic Museum.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Pretty good.
If you recall, everybody, that Eric had come on, Eric and Kiko, I believe, and Ciara. This felt like a while ago when we did Slashback Video 1.
It was the guy from Cinephile as well.
Yeah. Oh, that first one. Yeah. Well, the owner Cinephile came on with us.
That's right.
Modern video store, old video store.
That's right.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
but here we are in the new incarnation of Slashback. My co-hosts are seeing it for the very first time. What do you guys think?
Well, because these days you got to have a prequel, right? That's what this is.
Yeah. Uh-huh. This is like the mythos. I'm digging it. We got some backstory here.
Some narrative backstory. Eric, why don't you explain a little bit about what people have in store when we open this weekend?
So this version of Slashback Video is definitely different from the other versions. There's a whole narrative aspect that you guys heard us talk about recently, where we are actually telling pretty much a backstory. And if you stay close attention to some of the fine details and some of the Easter eggs, you'll be able to actually put together a fine narrative and a story behind, I guess, the beginning of Slashback.
Yeah. And also the origins. I mean, this episode will air on the eve of Slashback Video, the beginning's opening. But you basically get the origins of Tapehead, who is our kind of villainous icon, and why he's angry and why he's always wielding a knife, and why does he haunt the establishment of Slashback.
He's the Eddie to your Iron Maiden.
He very much
is. He's that guy that you want to know the story.
But like Eric said, there are Easter eggs throughout. You'll have to watch a video before you head inside. And we want you to walk away, hopefully taking a fun little narrative. And if you choose not to play along, then cool. You get the immersive experience.
Oh, yeah. The video store is amazing. We definitely stepped it up a notch from the last couple. And this one was really fun to do, especially when you're decorating and thinking about the narrative, as well as, you know, just how do we want this to look better or be the best Slashback it could be. And so this was a really fun one. I'll be working tonight after you guys are recording. Actually, I was literally just drilling something in when Ryan's like, okay, you're on. I'm like, okay. And then I'm going to go right back to doing that thing. So,
well, because in addition to, you know, the Slashback Video immersive experience, Eric is also building these very elaborate photo opportunities. So we're actually recreating a set from a very popular, I think now popular sequel.
Mm-hmm. And I think in the last year, this specific scene itself and movie has gotten like a little more hype. I know the movie in general had a really good hype in this scene in a certain community, and now it's actually being a little more renowned and looked at in a better light in a bigger community. Mm-hmm. So you'll understand everything I'm talking about when you come to Slashback Video.
Did you say that one of you has the body and the other has the brains, maybe? Is that what I'm led to believe?
Maybe. I have the brains. No, I'm joking.
And we can't wear it. I know you weren't going to reveal, but it was Emmanuel, Island of the Cannibals, Last Cannibals. And I am so excited to see that set.
That's incorrect, Ulrich.
Of all the films
you
pick.
You are absolutely incorrect. It's Tanya's Island.
Oh, okay. I watched that too. I'm into either of those.
Okay. So,
I thought there's going to be like a Tammy and the T-Rex corner, but I don't know.
There probably actually is around here.
All I can say is bring your dancing shoes.
Okay. Excellent.
Ryan, tell us, this is now the third iteration of this. And it's kind of interesting how this thing has evolved, right? Because the first version was just trying to recapture that vibe of walking into a video store and being surrounded. Because you were talking to some filmmaker friends that didn't grow up with that. And you said if you were going to do it a third time, it had to be special.
Yeah.
And so this feels like the most interactive version of it.
Yeah.
So when did that idea finally pop in? Like, all right, that's the right way to do this.
Well,
because idea two was 90s, right?
Yeah. Revenge of Slashback was like dipping into the 90s. But I think it was around right after I got back from Halloween Kills.
Yeah.
You guys were putting on the Evil Dead exhibit. Mm-hmm. We took a break from Slashback.
Yeah.
The Evil Dead exhibit moved in here.
So
and then, and then we came in and we sat down and
I felt like we took time to sit down and have a lot more meetings and talk about it, and it kind of like started as one thing and morphed and kept on molding and changing, and then
we aimed really high, really big with an idea, and then we were like, when are we going to open this? Yeah. Well, maybe we should table that one and see what else we could do. Yeah.
And then it's basically came from that really high, reach. And we kind of met in this middle ground, which like, this seems awesome. And then when we came up with the name, the beginning, then it was just like, okay, all these ideas snowballed of what to do, what kind of, how to decorate it, what to do. It was this one to me was one of the funnest ones to work on.
Yeah.
And,
nice.
And hardest one and more stressful. I mean, as you can see, there's some things in here that weren't in here before. And I'm like, okay, so.
Yeah. Built walls.
We had to build walls for this one. Yeah. So. But we also, there's a video, I'll say it. There's a video component to it as well.
Yeah.
So before you go into the actual thing proper, There's like a little video component, and you'll see some familiar faces. Mm-hmm. We wrangled Jonah Ray to be in it, which is really great. Yeah. So yeah, there's some fun stuff.
Wow, it just feels like every show influences the next one, because like mm-hmm. Evil Dead had interactive elements to it that you'd never really done before, like be part of the poster or, you know, be in that. So I think it's kind of cool that each time you guys do this, it's like one step further.
Yeah.
It's making it more interactive.
It's really great because, as you know, starting from, you know, our old shop, which was just an oddity shop, in the first photo, we started day one with a photo op that we didn't realize we had, because that wasn't really a term people threw around a lot, but we had a little like sideshow photo op in there. And then we kind of like just kind of snowballing from there. And every time we did a new exhibit in art show, I learned more. I learned more how to build things. I learned more about mechanics. I learned more about stuff and learned more about what people liked and wanted. And so every time I do a show, I take what I learned in that show, incorporate it into the next show.
Yeah.
And then I learn more there and then incorporate it. So it's really great, especially when you have something like Slashback, that's one of our only reoccurring exhibits, is to be able to see the levels and the steps that this exhibit takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really awesome.
It's cool.
But what we need to talk about is why on earth you put staples in that Sammy Kerr poster.
That Sammy Kerr poster has had many staples.
I see that.
I mean, you can't have life. if you have a video store experience, everything can't be pristine. It's got to be like
living. It's true.
Never pristine. Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. I think even the first Slashback when we were talking about it, is the posters couldn't be mint.
I know. That was definitely my evolution into adulthood, the day I quit stapling my posters to the wall and decided to buy frames. It was like something inside of me died.
And this Elvira poster behind you is wrecked. But you know what?
She loves a hairy chest.
And it's loved. We love it.
Wow.
But
that's my Jason up there, by the way. Oh, I have a Freddy in here too.
Freddy's over there.
I'm pointing to a Jason poster. It's from Friday 7, and it's the end when they reveal his face for the first time. I bought that when I was a little kid at Great Adventure in New Jersey. And I love that poster so much. And I put it up, and eventually one day I came home and my mom just threw it out. It's like, no. And so when I first moved here about 10, 11 years ago, I told that story to our friend Dave Parker, and he had that, and he's like, here you go. And I was like,
Kindling,
and now it's part of Slashback, which I'm very honored that it can continue in that tradition.
Yeah.
But that's a rad poster.
It is a rad poster.
But I can see why mom threw it out.
Well, it's fun. Like there's a kind of a process now, I feel like, to putting in Slashback, which is, build all the racks and then put all the tapes. And then there's the process of putting up all the posters. And we got new posters. I mean, like the Terror Vision one that's behind you. That's now on video cassette rare poster we have. So
Ryan, are you still combing like eBay for some of these these like hanging?
Oh, yeah.
I really got very excited over the Children of the Corn 3 corn. Oh, there it is.
And as you can
see, Children of the Corn 3 corn.
There's a lot more signage than there was before. And that's what I love, is just like,
there's a Carnosaur 2 clock.
I know that Carnosaur 2 clock.
So it's not amazing. It's even though it is about the VHSs, there's more than just that.
Yeah.
And just sitting around and actually sitting in a group and talking to people, you kind of realize that it's really the fun part is the decorating and talking to people. Yeah. I used to have that. Oh, remember that? Oh, look at that little thing. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, like, that's the thing, Slashback. When people are like, oh, what is it? And it's like, well, it's become more than just in a celebration of the VHS era. And obviously the covers, the lurid and fun and absurd covers that are on these tapes. But it's now a community. It's a community thing. So it's like, let's get people in, hanging out, looking at all the cool stuff, looking at the great art from all the artists. So, yeah.
One of the things I did this year, which I don't know why I think it's so cool, is have you noticed the difference of the little things hanging from the ceiling?
Like the mobiles and stuff like that?
I actually got them to spin.
Did you put them on motorables?
Yeah,
mechanisms?
So they're all spinning.
Oh, the shocker above me is spinning around. That's so fun.
But so the show opens, this episode goes live on Friday. It opens tomorrow, February 22nd, Mystic Museum
in Burbank.
In Burbank,
3204 West Magnolia Boulevard,
but
Burbank,
for
California.
How long? So people who want to fly in or travel.
So the opening reception is Saturday, but that comes with all the different perks that you don't really get on the museum days. But the museum days, because it's so interactive, you're going to want to come back.
Yeah.
So the opening night comes with the DJ, food, drinks, you know, mixtape.
Mixtape Mouse Girl will be here.
Hey, here with a setup.
Red Coffee.
Red Coffee will have a food truck, and they're both our sponsors, as well as Fright Rags and Fangoria and the Fourth Horseman.
Yep.
They will also be here in the back serving. And so it's going to be a whole partying event. And then it runs through June.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And big shout out to Bill Neal, who is a former Shockwaves guest. Yeah. He is a tremendous part of this this experience. And it's something I'm
And you'll see him in more than just one way.
That is correct. Yes. There are many people who are involved in this you'll see in many more ways. So,
So that's the fun about why this one was so fun to do. It was more than just setting up the show, too. It was other aspects that you guys will see that was really, really fun.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And I want to thank Elwood Walker.
Yes.
One of my students. And he's one of my students.
We'll take claim to you.
Eric, this is a good time for you to
get it. He was one of my long-term customers.
You got this.
All right. Well, Eric, thanks for popping in.
Yes.
And if you guys hear any noise and hammering and stuff like that, it's Eric working his ass off.
Hold the damn hammering!
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys.
And really quick before we dive in, because we didn't really get a chance to talk about this at the last show because we were kind of surrounded by burgers and Slayer and all sorts of craziness. But last Friday, so many incredible indie horror movies have come out that we have been talking about for months. So just a quick shout out, obviously VFW we mentioned during the ads at the beginning. After Midnight, which is Jeremy Gardner, Brie Grant. It's the follow-up to The Battery is finally out there.
I will say there is a scene in that movie I had to rewatch three times.
Yeah.
It's great, it's,
there's,
right?
There's a very specific moment that the first time it made me jump. The second time I was like, I just need to see that again. The third time I was like, I want to see how that was edited.
So yeah. I had Dave Lawson actually come into my horror class and dissect that scene.
Oh, it's great.
It was a really cool lesson.
Which is a big spoiler for your students, but
The scene they're talking about is where the guy drinks the alcohol from the mat and he like has to drink and it's so disgusting.
Gorilla just so wrong. Is that what that term is?
Yeah. The last house on the podcast, the guy got
If you want to see more Jeremy Gardner, Sadistic Intentions is also out as well. And Rodman Flender, Eat Brains Love.
Jeez, that's a trailer for that. We want to see it.
It's a lot of fun. You talk about Panic Fest when you got to host the screening of it? Or
yes. I mean, I did the Q&A with him and then we did an episode that is coming to people soon. Maybe in one of our in-between weeks.
Sure.
Where we have an episode with some of that rundown on those films.
Yeah.
And body horror.
And a ton of body horror.
Yeah.
All right.
Are we going to spend a couple minutes on
what we saw? Yeah, what have you seen? I honestly can't remember because...
Really? You're having
having one of those brain things. Actually, no, because I also recorded Just the Discs this week, so it's like so much movie. I don't know how you keep up with
Brian. Oh my God, I record like three shows a week now.
I don't remember what horror movie I watched this week.
That's why I only do this podcast. I like to stay faithful. so speaking of which, I saw a movie that Patrick Bromley, put in his top 10 last year, and I hadn't even heard of it. And we all did our top 10s, and none of us had mentioned this film. And it just hit Amazon. It's called Close Calls. And my only review of it straight away was, this is Jim Warnowski's When a Stranger Calls. And it's literally that. Like, if you watch it right now, you'd turn to me and go, wow, that is the most accurate review you've ever gotten. So it's basically a movie that absolutely should be unwatchable. And yet somehow, it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. It's a first-time indie kind of feature. It is a buxom girl walking around her house in her underwear while the phone keeps calling crank calls of some guy, you know, 80s style, you know, masturbating or talking to her. So everything about it is a cliche. And yet somehow it has this really weird hypnotic quality. It kind of, that's the work he's
Was
doing.
That a drill?
Yeah,
I heard a drill.
That was Abel Ferrer, no big deal. Young Abel Ferrer, so he's still kind of hot.
Yeah, he was still kind of hot in that one.
And then it gets kind of weird and Evil Dead-y in the middle. And it's not what you expect. Look, it should be 40 minutes shorter for sure. But this movie does work. It's kind of hypnotic. I think it's a hard one to recommend everyone, but it was really interesting and definitely factors in really nice to where we are right now because it's very much shot to look like an 80s VHS type movie. And usually that gimmick doesn't really work for me. The girl at the center of it's kind of fun to watch because she feels very modern. She feels like she's doing all the things that you wouldn't, if you did a slasher right now, all the things you'd be like, you can't do that. Don't go on social media with a boy. Don't get high doing this. Don't let that stalker guy come over and just hook up with you for one, it kind of hits all those tropes, but somehow I had fun. So I got to thank Patrick for this one, even though I don't know if people might get mad at me.
Where'd you see it again?
I think
think it hit Amazon. It's just, it's weird.
And what's it called again?
It's called Close Calls. And it's 2 hours and 8 minutes. And you're like, this movie should be 75 minutes.
But it never drags. See it? Where'd you see it?
I saw it on Amazon Prime.
Oh, Amazon Prime.
But he had seen it back when he maybe saw screeners. But he put it on his list. So I was like curious. And he kind of, I think, had a similar reaction. But it does feel Wernowski-ish. But in, it really is When a Stranger Calls. Same kind of movie.
Wow.
It has sequences where you're like, oh, I don't know. I should turn this off now. No. I'm still going to keep watching this. And I liked it. I got to say, I kind of liked it. So Richard Stringham, his first feature, I believe. Good for you, sir. It's like an interesting film. Would fit well on these shelves. Let me just say that.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Okay. Well, this week, I watched one that had been on my to-watch list literally for years. And this is Simon King of the Witches. And this is one that I had seen the box cover. I had seen the VHS cover. I remembered the poster. It's in a ton of exploitation books that I've read. And I, for some reason, had just never watched it. And I had always thought that it was this like extreme occult version of Last House on the Left, because that's how it was marketed. It was marketed as this kind of like sex orgy Manson-ish thing. And it's anything but that. Mm. It's really like a docudrama for witches, about witches, with a little bit of boobs and drug use and a little bit of psychedelia. Not even excessive amounts of boobs in there. But it stars Andrew Prynne, who is, I know, Elric's done. He's out. I'm sorry. It's not, it's no, it's okay. Are You in the House Alone, Wojnarowski version.
Okay, all right.
It's got some. So, but it stars Andrew Prynne, who is absolutely phenomenal. And apparently I wasn't the only one who thought so, because Rob Zombie put him in Lords of Salem, and he's definitely got a cult following. And he went on to do a ton more exploitation films and stuff across the board. He was in a lot of TV stuff as well. But 1971, it's this very kind of mod hippie culture. And this witch, he calls himself a witch, rolls into town and gets involved with a male, I'll call him, prostitute, who hangs out with all of these really wealthy kind of mod partiers. If you think like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, like that type of scene, and starts kind of doing spells on them and making charms for pay and things like that. And he gradually gets more and more fame and more acclaim, and people are paying him more, and he starts cursing people, and then everything gets crazy. And then he falls in love with the, I think it's the mayor's daughter or something like that. But it's mostly about the witchcraft and him trying to achieve the ultimate witchcraft levels. There is a really cool scene where he decides to go visit a Wiccan church.
Oh.
And model, who is apparently a popular model from the time period, this woman, Ultraviolet, is doing this nude like sacrifice thing. And he starts yelling at them, and she starts yelling back. And it's like Wicca versus witchcraft or whatever he's practicing. And everybody's naked. And so that's fun. But yeah.
I'm back in.
It is definitely not the sex orgy Manson film that I thought it was. But it's still really well done. And again, the lead, Andrew Prynne, is really fucking good and quite dreamy in it as well.
Mm.
So that is Simon, King of the Witches.
I just thought that was set in the Blood of Satan's Claw type period. I didn't know it was a contemporary thing.
So the poster makes it look like that. Yeah, the poster definitely makes it look really extreme, really graphic, and almost as if it is set long ago. Mm. No, it's total 70s mod. It's like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls with witchcraft.
Well, Elric and I can talk about this one. I went to the New Beverly because they had a double feature of The Pact from 1977. Yeah. In fact, I almost watched it on VHS with our guest, which is coming up in a moment. But thankfully, we waited for the big screen. And it is the Killer Dog movie.
It'd go well with Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs. Those two things have a lot in common. Well, they just have a lot in common.
So basically, it's on a, what is it, like a little island, and it's like this family man.
A summer resort island.
Joe Don Baker is like the dad of the bunch. He's got two boys and a wife and a good dog.
Whenever he's a love interest, I'm so in. Like the idea of Joe Don kissing people in close up, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in.
Wow.
Because it's just weird tongue.
So they're building their dream home, right? And apparently there's some wild dogs in the neighboring forest. Although in the beginning you get to see a summering vacation couple force their kid to leave the dog in the forest because they're like, yo, you had them all summer. We got to go.
But yeah. I think that's hinting.
That's why movie. I said that movie yeah. makes me cry. I don't think I've made it past that scene.
But I think the hint there is that that's what all these dogs are. That they're kind of like, what's the one you like, Ryan? So God.
White God.
It's like this yes. is the idea that this is an island of people come for summer that get some random dog look after, and then they just leave it there and then take off back home. And then all these dogs are starving, get together and cause some havoc.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that havoc is awesome.
Yeah.
Like the way this is filmed, like I'd never seen this movie before. Had you?
I saw it about a couple weeks ago for the New Beverly Calendar, which is a bummer because I wish I'd waited. But something, you know, that both these films that we saw were directed by Robert Klaus, who did Enter the Dragon. And so when we're researching these, blew my mind to read he is completely deaf. And I've never read that about a filmmaker. So wow. So that's why visual storytelling was so important to him. And I'm thinking about these martial art movies going, that is so interesting. Like this guy was completely, like couldn't direct the actors. He had to have a translator there to help him. And I was just like, this is fascinating because he's such a good visual filmmaker.
How did he direct this?
Yeah, films? I want to know how he did composition and everything.
Yeah, it's just cool. It's just cool. You don't hear enough about people with those kind of disabilities really like pushing the limits, and especially in that period, the
70s. Oh, yeah.
But it's really savage kind of.
Well, yeah, and I know you went recently to like Orca and The Prophecy and all that. This felt like one of those crazy animal attack movies. Not quite Cujo, but like pretty like the attack sequences were incredible.
It's realistic in the same way Cujo is.
Very realistic. Like I jumped up a few times for some of the characters.
I don't know what they do to the dog's face to make them
have that
permanent
teeth thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty creepy. It's
really like they look really angry. I don't think
when they pull their lips back.
Yeah.
I trained my old, I had a terrier and I trained her to do that with Sun Butter.
Strummer?
Yeah. It was Strummer. He growls whenever I put a fingertip full of Sun Butter near him. It's a thing. No. But I trained my terrier to do it. I would hold like Sun Butter in front of her face and she would pull her mouth back and look vicious.
I had a dog that would smile.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Whenever he came home, she would smile and just like grin her teeth. Yeah,
smile so looks terrifying.
But you end up with a Joe Dong versus
puppy.
A whole bunch of dogs, and it gets pretty wild. It's pretty fun.
All right, so you're saying I should watch it?
I think so. I think
I saw White God and endured White God.
My guess is they weren't probably cruel to any of these dogs. I have a feeling this is probably was a good set. That's just my guess.
Abandonment is cruel.
Yeah, because I think the message overall is they're trying. The last image of this movie is very positive. You'll like that.
Is like incredible.
It feels like a TV movie that we kind of
dog high fiving a 5-year-old.
You have to wait and see.
Even better, it's Joe Dong.
If they aren't having a damn tea party, I'm not watching.
But it was one of those like freeze frame moments that like when you're in an audience with people after experiencing that, like everyone started cheering. They're like, oh yeah.
Is it like Jaws 3D freeze frame with the dolphins coming out of the water?
Nothing's that good. You're setting too high a bar. Life.
Setting a high bar.
But The Pact, 1977.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I saw one thing, and I caught up on a lot of television. So as you all know, I'm a big Fulci fan. Oh, yeah. Love the man.
Love everything.
I've got a tattoo on my body for the beyond. Love everything he does. But I don't like House by the Cemetery.
Oh, Bob. What?
Once you set aside Bob.
That is an amazing kill sequence.
What? Which one?
The
one with the landlady who comes and sells them the house and she gets
that hacked. That is amazing. Oh. See,
I don't think it's not crazy enough for me to love it. And also it's so convoluted. And
I think when I was like 17, I felt that way. But like recently when I started again, it became my favorite. Honestly,
I love the Blue Underground disc. I love all the special features on it. I'm glad I own it because I'm just a completist. But I mean, it's just like I like Fulci weird, but I can't tell you anything like what this fucking movie is about. Like, I could find a thread in everything he does. But I'm just like, oh, it's a family that moves into a house. The dad's got some sort of investigative thing going on. Bob is seeing some little girl.
It's like a fairy tale element to it.
There's like a weird fairy tale element that doesn't necessarily tie up well at the end.
A Nazi doctor, zombie.
Yeah, Dr. Freudstein and all that stuff. I don't know, man. I watched it over the weekend and I just got real bored by it.
This might be our last podcast.
No, I'm on Ryan's team with this one.
What?
I like it, but it's lesser Fulci. Great score. The music is
lesser
incredible.
Fulci. Yeah.
All right, we might need to bring the guests on sooner than we expected.
You can't go full plot outline on a Fulci film.
This week's episode is sponsored by RLJE Films and their newest release, VFW. Stephen Lang, William Sadler, Martin Cove, and Fred Williamson are in for the fight of their lives in Fangoria's VFW from director Joe Bigas. Now playing in theaters on demand in digital HD. See it on the big screen and own it on Apple TV today.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fangoria. It's 2020 and Fangoria magazine is back on shelves, and Fangoria.com is on a mission to bring you even more horror content than ever before. It's a great new decade to be a horror fan. Fangoria.com is your destination for all the horror news of the day, featuring a constant curation of the Fango editorial team's favorite links from across the internet. You'll also find deep dives and daily thoughts from the biggest names in horror, as well as exclusive access to the Fangoria vault. Become a Fangoria Plus member and receive 4 coffee table-worthy issues of the magazine, full digital access to Fangoria.com, invitations to special events and screenings, and much, much more. Go to Fangoria.com and become a member today. Use promo code SHOCKWAVES for 15% off right now. Again, that promo code is SHOCKWAVES.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Can you fly, sucker? Fright Rags celebrates the 30th anniversary of Tremors with an all-new collection of officially licensed t-shirts available now. Plus, they've reprinted several of their best-selling designs, now back in stock and shipping immediately. It's available exclusively at fright-rags.com. Also, stay tuned this Monday for the online release of the brand new Slashback video t-shirt featuring artwork by Mark Schoenbeck. Listeners get 10% off their first order with the code WAVES10. That's all at fright-rags.com. Listeners get 10% off their first order with the code WAVES10.
This episode is also brought to you by houseofmysterioussecrets.com, your number one source of horror merchandise for 15 years running. They have everything: toys, apparel, soundtracks, comics, masks, hard-to-find collectibles, and so much more. Their inventory caters to genre fans of all kinds, from classic monsters to 80s B-movies to modern favorites. House of Mysterious Secrets ships worldwide and offers free shipping on all U.S. orders over $65. Where else can you find a Friday the 13th fanny pack, a John Carpenter record, a Suspiria t-shirt, a Monster Squad wallet, a Godzilla hat, and the latest issue of Fangoria all in one place? Head on over to houseofmysterioussecrets.com to see it all for yourself.
Tonight's episode is also brought to you by Diabolik DVD. For almost 20 years, Diabolik DVD has been the source for horror, cult, and weird cinema to customers around the world. Diabolik offers a one-stop shopping experience for all your favorite labels, including Arrow, Synapse, Vinegar Syndrome, Severin, Mondo Macabro, Blue Underground, 88, and many more from all corners of the globe. Whether you're looking for the definitive version of Suspiria or trying to upgrade your crusty old DVD of Cannibal Holocaust, Diabolik is owner-operated and the small business choice you have been craving. Shop online now at DiabolikDVD.com. Ernie, you might need to weigh in on this too.
If Scarlotta's not a fan of this, I will eat my hat.
Okay, Josh Scott.
This is a Scarlotta.
Gentlemen,
film,
why don't you introduce yourselves into the ring of Fulci Fight Fest?
Hello, this is the voice of Josh Miller.
Whoa.
Wait a minute, is this Hollywood screenwriter of Sonic the Hedgehog, Josh Miller?
Whoa.
Well, yes, it is.
Well, you have money then coming out of your pockets,
oh,
sir.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at all this money
I
on
know.
You.
I wish race that were true.
Why are we standing? You could buy us chairs.
I preferred the original animation.
It may surprise you that they didn't give two mostly unknown screenwriters points in the
That's okay. Sequel.
That is a shock.
Everyone cheered at my screening. Two things happened to mine. A, at the end of the movie, I won't spoil it, but everyone cheered. And B, when I think I told you at the start of the movie, a dad sitting, this is out in Santa Clara, walks over to me and goes, in front of my two kids, and just goes, "I am the hugest Shockwave fan. So good to meet you, man." And I'm sitting there going, "Yes, it's Sonic the Hedgehog." So I
just
want
you to know that this is the first movie where my son did not finish one box of popcorn before the movie starts and then turn to me and go, "Mommy, I need more popcorn." He nursed it throughout the whole movie.
Oh,
he was focused. Yeah.
All right. Well, we got Hollywood and documentarian on as well, Mr. Steven Scarlotta.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
And even more than all your filmmaking, you're both podcasters. That's what's most important.
This is a crossover. Best movies never made, finally. Crossing over with Shockwaves.
Should we explain what that is?
Well, first off, hang on.
We
got a debate going on, guys.
House by the Cemetery. Oh, right. Lesser Fulci, yes or no?
Well, how wide is the spectrum in your mind from lesser to like what you say is the best one? The Beyond?
I'd say House by the Cemetery and the Beyond.
Zombie, the Beyond.
Zombie.
And City of the Living Dead.
Because
and now The Psychic. It's all great.
That bottom end can get really
lizard
bad.
Lizard and skin.
Yeah. So I'd put it top 5.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh,
top three. Steve Scarlato. Yeah. On your Fulci scale?
Yeah, definitely top five.
Top three?
But I have Sweet House of Horror on my top five.
Oh, you and Jack Sestero, right?
I put Slash Dance up there as well. Or Murder Rock, I guess is what it's called. Yeah, Murder Rock goes in my top five.
I'm a fan of that.
I will say the first time I saw it, like a couple weeks later, I was like describing it to somebody. I'm like, I can't really remember though. I think I was like really high, and then I thought back and I was like, no, wait, I wasn't.
It's just Fulci.
I just don't really remember. It wafts over you like a
plot's superfluous. You remember set pieces.
To me,
let's just lay this down. To me, Primo Fulci, and this is not to be disputed, there's The Beyond, City of the Living Dead, Zombie, and New York Ripper.
I would add Lizard in a Woman's Skin.
The fact that you're shaking your head over New York Ripper?
No, because I love them all, but
Lizard
there's no way
in New York. A Woman's Skin.
New York Ripper is so much better than Houseboat.
Oh, my God.
It's a good movie, but
The Psychic, I would definitely say, kind of gets in there.
Let me go on record and say he's never made a bad movie. Let's move on.
House of Clocks needs some work.
We all skipped Devil's Honey, and that's just the best crime in movies.
What about Conquest?
Conquest?
Fantastic. That's got to be in your top five, Steve.
Oh, yeah. I love Conquest.
So we're going to do a show where we actually – wait, this is going to be a screen drafts with all of us on it.
Podcast.
And we're going to rank all the Fulci movies.
I will do that.
We will kill
each other. Okay, guys. Let's do it.
I'll bring my naked toe and go New York Ripper style.
I mean, it's – quack, quack.
Somebody's bringing a saxophone. It's getting weird, guys. Saxophone.
Holy shit, we didn't even mention Don't Torture a Duckling. That's how good that filmmaker is. We just talked about 10 films, and that is how – and people still think of him as like some slight – filmmaker, like they do, like not people like us, but there's so many people out there who think he's a joke.
Hey, my horror trivia team's named after him.
Yeah, so. Okay. I will wear my Elmer Fudd hat, guys, and we will go with this. Let's do it.
Cat in the brain is so ahead of her
saxophone.
Time.
Oh, yeah.
Saxophone and the Elmer Fudd hat.
It was Wes Craven before Wes Craven.
Brain has an amazing score. Yeah. I love the score for it.
Yeah, I won that at horror trivia. Not to keep going back.
Damn right you did.
Really? Yeah,
wow,
the vinyl.
So both of you guys were on our previous show, Killer POV, separately. But now, since then, podcast history has happened.
We've joined forces.
Everyone should be listening to this show already. But tell us about Best Movies Never Made.
Well, for those who don't know Steve, he made a great documentary called Jodorowsky's Dune, which was all about Jodorowsky's attempt to make Dune in the 70s. I'm explaining Steve for it.
I should get a re-release before the new Dune comes out, in my opinion.
Where can people watch that right now? Is that streaming anywhere?
It's never been on Netflix or anything like that, unfortunately. Wow. So you still got to rent it, unfortunately.
Well, that was one I feel along with kind of like Napoleon, Kubrick's Napoleon. Yeah. There's kind of like a short list of like really, really famous unmade movies. And I feel like that was kind of on there. Yeah. Would have been like the most expensive movie. Like it was like Avengers Endgame level budget, but in like the mid 70s. And it kind of kickstarted all these other careers. So that's Steve's doc. And basically, our podcast is just a continuation of that, where each episode is a different, interesting movie that never quite got made.
Yeah. And it's been pretty fun listening to a lot of them. I mean, you did like a deep dive on Spider-Man recently and got to hear about the almost Joe Zito directed director Friday 4 and Prowler.
I was on one of the episodes getting to talk about Guillermo del Toro's Mouth of Madness.
At the Mountains of Madness.
Mountains of Madness one. So yeah.
We definitely skew horror. I hope our listeners don't mind that. That's just our own interests.
Well, I the ones I listened to recently were The Thing 1 and 2 episodes you did. Mm-hmm.
That one was incredible.
It made me sad.
It would have been so good.
But it made me so sad because it's like I want to watch that because I like that he did something very different than I would have thought. You know, mm-hmm. by the one tidbit you guys give away at start is that the two characters are frozen. With one's pointing a gun and one's pointing a flamethrower, and they're both frozen and ice. And you're like, that's such a great way to get past them. And then the rest of them are like Carpenter tropes. And I love that about it. It was like, I want to see that. And it's fun to have the people there when you can get them who can contribute and look back at their not failed, but just unrealized vision. That's really cool.
Well, for listeners, we're talking about David Leslie Johnson, who's now kind of like James Wan's go-to guy, wrote Aquaman, a bunch of Conjuring sequels.
I don't feel as bad for him now. I felt really bad while I was listening to him.
But at the time, it was like he was kind of Frank Darabont's guy, but none of the things he'd worked on had happened, including this. And Sci-Fi Channel, I think, full of hubris after the success of their Dune miniseries, if anyone remembers that, somehow thought maybe they would have enough money to do two-part Thing miniseries.
Yes, I remember that.
And what's cool about it is because it's two-part, he does all the kind of like, oh, we're just repeating stuff from the Thing in the first part, but then he like gets past all that and they start doing like new Thing stuff we never got to see in the Carpenter movie.
New thing. I'm excited.
It's kind of cool too because he took it out of the snow because we were used to that like a PlayStation 2 sequel game in the snow, and he took it to the desert, which I thought was
interesting. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought it was a great concept of how he
took it. Did you guys ever read the Dark Horse Comics miniseries? There was a string of miniseries that were the Thing. It was called Thing from Another World. And it was a direct sequel to John Carpenter's The Thing. Mm. And it found MacReady on the ice.
Yep.
And it was like an ice cutter who discovers MacReady. He gets on board the ship. And then
like he's still alive?
He's still alive, barely clinging to life. And then it just follows MacReady as he's on the ship. There's a Thing outbreak on the ship. But I remember by the second run, like miniseries, he was like in South America, and like they suddenly there was a Thing outbreak in South America. And I remember this great panel. It was like a it was like a splash page, but it was like I think it was MacReady, but he's got a flamethrower. He's jumping over a fence and he's lighting all these sheep on fire because they're all turning into the Thing.
That's pretty cool.
And they're hard to come by now. I mean, like, unfortunately, I sold all of my Thing comics and now I want them back. But they're kind of hard. They go for a pretty penny now on eBay.
Yeah.
It's interesting in the jungle. Yeah. Like this one, it started off, it got to the chickens. So when they started breaking eggs, like little Things kept popping out. Yeah. Really clever stuff.
One of my favorite bits in that, too, is that it's like one of our heroes is like talking to somebody they know through like the window at like a diner. And the guy's just kind of like acting weird. And then when we cut inside, it's almost like a deep sea angler where the head's just on the end of this long, creepy flesh stock and the floor is just like all Thing.
Oh, wow.
Gross body horror madness.
There was a pretty good time in the 90s where a lot of these giant horror and sci-fi IPs got re-explored. Like Aliens, a lot of people don't know, is like a long-running comic book series.
Oh, so many. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was the first Dark Horse run that was like a black and white one. I forgot what
they followed Hicks.
That was the second one. It was like Mark Verheiden, who did like the Battlestar series. He was a writer on it. But like then The Thing fell in line, and then Dark Horse is doing like Universal Monsters. So there was like a fun kind of re-examination of these giant IPs that I think kind of go unnoticed, like RoboCop versus Terminators, hands down, one of the best miniseries I've ever read.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I think in Success, Steve and I have talked about it would be fun to pair with like Dark Horse and for writers who like own these unmade scripts to do. It was like for the episode Rob was on, which was Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. That actually got turned into a comic book.
Right.
And I think that would just be a cool way to give these some, like I keep talking to Jared about it since he was on with his Toby Hooper's.
Which was, that was a great one.
White Zombie. I'm like, that'd make a great comic book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little mini series.
Was there a story like that growing up that you were obsessed by? For me, it was always every iteration of Creature from the Black Lagoon. I would be like, ooh, Joe Dante's doing it. Ooh, John Carpenter's doing it. Ooh, Guillermo's doing it. Few years. Yeah, whoever it is. And I'd always be excited just thinking through their visuals, you know, what that would look like. But was there something like that got you kind of hooked when you were young about these unmade movies, these stories you'd come across?
The first one I read about was in Cine Fantastique when I was in high school. It was Cronenberg's Total Recall.
Oh, that's right. With John Hurt, right? It's going to be John Hurt.
William Hurt. Yeah. And then some cases, Patrick Swayze. Yeah. But I loved Total Recall, the Schwarzenegger movie, and my mind like broke to think there could have been a Cronenberg. But the one was in Fangoria was John Carpenter was going to do Peter Benchley's The Beast.
I lost
my mind because that's when the book first came out. Wow. And that's the one that kind of haunted me. Like, I would have loved to have seen that one.
Yeah. But for me, it was James Cameron's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
When that was like announced, I was like, yes!
Wasn't there also a Toby Hooper Spider-Man for canon?
That was like the very, but that was like, I didn't hear
that. I remember that just as a one sheet or something.
This is like post-Terminator 2. Like, hey, he's going to do Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh,
that would
have
been cool.
I was just reading in prep because Josh and I held a very successful screening of Full Eclipse here.
Which I just saw the VHS.
That's right. I was reading up on some other werewolf movies and I read all about I found an article that was about John Landis's sequel for American Werewolf in London.
Oh.
And he had turned in a script. There was a script. And he turned it in. And they were like, no. And apparently what it followed, who's the girl that Jack and David are talking about? They're like, Debbie, I think it's Debbie Klein.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
It follows Debbie Klein as she makes her way to England for whatever reason and gets lured back. This is some sort of lycanthrope kind of thing, but she goes back to the town. She meets the guys at the pub. They've changed things up, but it was told through John Landis's words, this article. So it was very, very fascinating. But I was like, that's an interesting angle.
Weird character. Yeah. It's very my favorite weird joke when Griffin Dunne first appears and he talks about Debbie Klein crying so much that she went in the arms of one of their best friends. Yes. He's like, even in death, life mocks me. that was the greatest joke.
I remember he said that David Nolan was supposed to come back as like a ghost and then Debbie Klein meets the nurse and all that stuff. Yeah, it was weird.
Sounds interesting.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, neither have I.
I'll dig out the article for it.
So. But if that had happened, we never would have gone in Paris. So, lucky things.
I think, because I was talking to Paul Davis, who we're all friends with, about that script, because I was curious, because I know he literally wrote the book on in London. And I was curious, I was like, if he knew how to get the script. Now, I can't remember if I'm remembering correctly, he was saying that it maybe got destroyed or something. Wow. Because this is, pre-computers. Ugh. It might have got burnt up in a fire. But I think Paul read it and he can come on the podcast, maybe.
Oh, I'll tell you that.
Perfect. That'd be great.
What about Beyond Beyond?
Beyond.
Was there a script? I can't remember if the story
was. No, it was. I thought it was Bob Murawski was on Killer POV. Yeah. And I thought he said he just got together with
the screenwriter.
Dave Warbeck, the lead.
Yeah.
No, at some point he was in Italy reacting with those
people. No, but he said the lead wrote the sequel. Like he had a whole idea and then he passed away. But I think he explained what he wanted.
Yeah, he explained what it was supposed to be. I remember
that was the last thing on that episode too. I was so angry. I was like, I want to know more.
The Beyond the Beyond.
I don't know if there is much more to it. That's the thing. We'll have to ask Bob.
The Eighth Door.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of part of why we wanted to start the podcast. Is you read these little snippets about these, and you're like, oh, that sounds so cool. But what happened in it? So our idea is just explaining, getting the scripts, and kind of walking you through. As Becca knows from her episode, we make their guests act out. Scenes.
Which I was just amazing at playing the mutant penguins.
You were great.
That was so good.
Sometimes you guys convince me to do things that I would never would. For example, I listened to your deep dive on Super Mario Brothers for the last three episodes, and I was like, maybe I will watch that movie, and I lasted less than 5 minutes. I was like, the one they made is not good at all.
My kids love Super Mario so much, because they loved Sonic, right? And they loved that character, and I played them the trailer to that movie, because I was really excited. I found a place to rent it, and they just looked at me and went, no. Like, I've never seen them take a stand against a movie, and I was like, I guess I'll never get
again?
You're like 8 and 5. They just would not watch that movie. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's because Luigi just doesn't look like Luigi.
Well, and Sega lost the console wars, but now they won the movie wars.
So we're going to talk VHS as well, because I know you guys wanted to talk about that. But just to tie into your show, one of the things I thought would be fun, and it doesn't have to be a deep dive thing or anything, because I know Steve likes to get his hands dirty, and do the work, is maybe name drop a couple of surprisingly unknown titles. I recently got someone gave me like a first run paperback of The Dead Zone, and I think right on the back it says coming soon, George Romero's The Stand, and you're like, oh, it's right there on the paperback that was supposed to happen, and now of course it didn't happen, but I think he was supposed to do Pet Sematary. There was quite a couple of George Stephen King ones. So I don't know. I figured you could enlighten us with a few crazy ones.
Yeah, I was going to say though.
Has like a book.
Oh no, I have a couple. But if you go, I'm not going to go through all of them. But if you go on, if you cruise through Fangoria. George Romero, what is it called? The
Terror Teletype.
I swear, if you played a drinking game, if you're just going to open one up and look for his name, he's always there. And it's amazing because he barely made anything in the 90s, but he was all over that.
Always.
You know?
Yeah, but apparently, even though he didn't make anything in the 90s, it was his most financially successful time, I think, just for writing stuff.
Yeah, must have been, because he was everywhere. I don't know if this was in Famous Monsters. I found this somewhere in my files, but this was an interesting log line for a George Romero movie. It was called Mayday, and it was a George Romero project announced after Creepshow about a zombie outbreak on a plane.
Wow.
Kind of ahead of itself in the 80s, I thought.
Well, one thing we've learned on the podcast too, like perfect example when we had Adam Rifkin on, talk about a lot of things, in particular his He-Man movie and his Planet of the Apes movie he was going to do in the 80s at like 22
Oh my, that Planet of the Apes story is incredible.
I know. But we asked him about his, I think it was a Toxic Avenger remake. And he's like, oh, that, I like literally had one meeting with Lloyd Kaufman and somehow
but they announced
that,
it.
Or that leaked to the trades, you know.
So, he was explaining that something as simple as that is just overhearing something ended up in trades and you're like, I never really worked on that.
It's so
just,
I wonder with a lot of this Romero stuff. I mean, I think if it was on the back of a published copy of Dead Zone, that was probably almost happening. But I'm sure he's George Romero. I'm sure they asked him about every single popular Stephen King novel or, you know, horror franchise.
And he probably like, I'd love to do that. And they're like, oh, put it in the trades.
Or something as simple as like, you know, I've been thinking about a zombie film on a plane. Then it goes.
Mayday.
Yeah, everything.
I'd never heard that before. That's cool.
Yeah,
that one. I forgot where that one popped. I've been collecting them for so long. Wait, I think I have another. Okay, hold on. Let me see.
So when you say files, like do you have physical print magazines or how? Because the thing about Steve, if you don't mind me saying, is your knowledge, your memory, recall. You know, we could say something random. You'd be like, I remember reading about that in Fangoria 13 or whatever. It's like the way that you pluck that you remember that one magazine that said it is incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll print. I have a huge box, and I go to the libraries. So whenever I'm there, I print tons of stuff. So I have files with all these projects in it and everything. Because you know, now with the podcast, I get to go into them and pull them out. It's great if I don't have to go to a library and look. But then again, when I go to a library, I'm there for a few hours researching what we're going to work on. And then I need the additional 2 hours for my wormhole. Because then I'll just stumble upon something else. Like, wait, what is it? You know, then I got to.
And he'll inevitably like text me like a little cropped picture from a magazine. Recently he sent me one about Dave Parker. Our friend Dave Parker.
I stumbled upon
some Stuart Gordon project he was working on like 15 years ago.
Wow.
And then I think I texted that to Parker and he was just like, yeah, it didn't happen.
Oh, sorry. Well, the one I'm fascinated about, I know it's silly, but it popped up in Fangoria twice and I shared it with Josh, was that Ice Cube was going to play a werewolf hunter in a movie called Stray Dogs.
Yes.
And it was
I watched that.
So what's up? Do you know about that?
I know. I remember reading it in Fangoria.
I know. Yes. The guy who did the Kane movie, See No Evil. And I was like, I would have loved to have seen Ice Cube hunting werewolves.
Well, there was also in the other similar werewolf vein, the other one I got excited about was Rennie Harlan's Werewolves on the Moon.
Oh, I don't know that one. I love Rennie
Harlan. Yeah, so Rennie Harlan was going to do a film that was about basically like a space station that's on the moon. But these werewolves discovered, they're like, oh, wait, it's a full moon all the time.
Yeah.
So we're just going to go. So we're going to wolf out. And it was like one of those just ludicrous ideas. And there was like another one too. I always remember the werewolf ones, but there was like a biker werewolf gang. It wasn't Werewolves on Wheels, but it was going to, it was, I forgot. Like, I remember. I want to say like Robert De Niro. They were throwing around Robert De Niro's name for it. It was like one of those Tarantella type things. I was like, flagged. I want to see werewolves.
The 90s had mental like flag. The best weird, dumb, amazing werewolf ideas. My theory is that like you can do so much with vampires, but it's like a werewolf story at the end of the day kind of should just be the classic Wolfman or American Werewolf. So I think after like those movies were so big in the 80s, everyone was just like, "What? Well, what else can we do?" And for some reason in the 90s, everyone loved just like genre combos.
I mean, werewolf businessmen.
Yeah. Werewolf cops full of clips.
Was that before Ice Cube was in Ghost of Mars or after, do you think?
I think it's slightly right after Ghost of Mars.
Interesting.
Which is
could have been a thing. Yeah, Ice Cube franchise.
One more I found. I think I found this in a Monsters. Roger Corman was planning to follow up Death Race 2000 with Lee Majors in a $10 million movie called Grand Prix 2000.
How cool.
I would have
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Yeah, that one I'm kind of curious about as well. But yeah, here's a batshit Roger Corman one I stumbled upon. Where is it?
The difference is he made most of the ideas.
Yeah,
fuck
yeah.
It, let's make it.
Where was it? Oh, yeah, this one was odd. Roger Corman returns to the director's chair for a thriller titled He's Back. And the movie is about neo-Nazis attempting to clone Hitler. So that would have been a trip in the 90s.
That somehow tracks, but not in the 90s. Then it just got weird.
It became Shockwave.
Yeah.
Well, it's also weird, the ones like we had with the Spider-Man one, it almost makes it hard to know exactly what to do for the podcast, is properties where they just keep trying and failing over and over. Yeah. And like Creature from the Black Lagoon, there's like 15 scripts. We're actually having David Bruckner on next week. We're going to record to talk about his two different Friday the 13th.
Oh, wow.
He tried to do
excessive amounts of research into Blood Meridian for an article a couple of years ago. And there's like five different versions of that. And art, like people had concept. Somebody's, I think it was Jess Franco. Somebody shot a like little teaser from it. Yeah, that was a lot. Yeah, like James Franco, I think, shot a little teaser.
I think The Stand, eventually we're going to do The Stand maybe to coincide with the.
That'd be cool.
New miniseries, because I'm curious if the Romero one, because we have a script that's written by Rospo Pallenberg, who was like, he's the guy who directed Cutting Class, the great Brad Pitt late slasher movie. I think the reason he wrote that was because he was like John Borman's protege. I think he wrote, he didn't write Deliverance. What's the one in the forest with
Emerald Forest?
I think he wrote that one. He definitely wrote Excalibur. Uh-huh. So it makes sense that he would have been somewhat prestigious until he directed Cutting Class, I suppose.
Cool. Huh. So he could come on your show?
We had him at Friday Night Frights when I screened Cutting Class. He was fun.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, go give us more, Scarlotta. Give us more. We're not done with you.
While he's looking, I can talk about one as far as something we've been prepping for a future episode. I don't want to give too much away, but is the Universal's attempt to make King Kong in the 70s before it was shut down by the Dino De Laurentiis one. Whoa. And they had a whole script that was written by Bull Goldman, who won an Oscar for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And then that kind of tying up to Peter Jackson's first attempt to make King Kong in the 90s, which people don't know about. That's one where they got like really far into pre-production. Bernie Wrightson, who we all love, flew out to New Zealand and he was designing Skull Island.
It was the same puppets as Meet the Feebles, so it didn't work. It's just weird. The rabbit with AIDS.
But then it was like, I think Universal blamed it on, they're like, oh, there's too many. There's Mighty Joe Young's coming out and the Roland Emmerich Godzilla. But Peter Jackson was pretty sure it was because the Frighteners tanked.
Wow.
But not in Brazil. And Brazil was the number one movie of the year.
Really?
The Frighteners. Yeah, they really saved. I remember living in New Zealand time and they were so excited that it was number one in Brazil. So I was like, yes, because I love that movie. I love The Frighteners. Frighteners was a really fun movie.
Yeah.
It holds up.
Yeah.
There was one that I got especially excited about in the early 90s. It was after Bram Stoker's Dracula came out. But James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, was writing a Van Helsing script for Anthony Hopkins.
Ooh. Oh, that's cool. Right.
Yeah. Yes. And I got super stoked about that. And then they came out with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
You know, I watched that again thinking, because, you know, horror movies tend to get better with age. Not that one.
No.
I was almost more disappointed than I was then.
Frankenstein, De Niro's Frankenstein monster, hiding in the bushes and watching a family unpack a bunch of potatoes, and then there's like this kind of slow zoom of Frankenstein monster going nodding his head head happy because he brought them the potatoes. He was just happy that they were he brought them joy, and I was like, what are you fucking doing,
potatoes, bro? Good.
They try to make a bunch of Universal stuff. Like he brought up Creature from the Black Lagoon. Yeah. We did a whole mummy thing throughout the whole 90s. They tried to make Bride of Frankenstein. Anne Rice did a draft for. James Cameron tried to do his own mummy separate.
That's right.
They tried to make a mummy movie with Tom Cruise.
What's weird about one is that feels like something we would have had on our show.
It does.
Yeah, it really does.
And we would have discussed that.
Like he's playing comedy and he's meant to be dumb. And you're like, what are you doing to Tom Cruise right now?
Dr. Jekyll's like Nick Fury.
Yes. That sequence we would have covered for sure.
Yeah.
I would have. Russell Crowe, I actually don't mind in that movie. Like he's the one part of that. I'm like, I'm kind of into that.
He looks like he's going to explode.
Yeah. But it's Russell. Say that like it's a bad thing.
He likes beer. Leave him alone.
Yeah, exactly.
My father was telling me, I think he picked up this book last year, but I guess there's a book about unmade Godzilla movies. Or there was like about the history of Godzilla, but there's a chapter about unmade Godzilla movies, but it goes into the Stan Winston designed Godzilla when he was going to do one. I forgot for who. And then there was like a Godzilla movie that they might have shot or they never, but it was Godzilla versus a werewolf.
Hmm.
Yeah, what? Like a giant werewolf.
A little tiny werewolf.
Well, you wouldn't believe it if somebody told you now, like, oh, Adam Wingard's doing Godzilla versus King Kong. You would be like, no, that is not a real movie. But that's a movie we get soon. I don't know what that's going to be. But that, to me, is bonkers. So it feels like the huger the movie is now, the less likely it sounds. It feels like something that would have been made for $2 by Corman, but now it's a $200 million movie. Yeah. So we've gone almost in a weird reverse of that. I have no idea what to
expect. B-movie aesthetic. It's the A-movie now. Like the B-movie thinking is now the tentpole movie.
Yeah, but they're just not written in phone booths anymore.
Yeah, we almost got Meg in the 90s. I wish we got that one in a way.
Because, I do too, because I was just decimated that it did not open with the Megalodon attacking the T-Rex, which would have been a total 90s set piece. And instead we get Jason Statham flexing, which still is okay, but I wanted the 90s version.
That's another one where they tried and failed so many times.
Yeah, he would have been eating surfers in Hawaii, which at the concept art, and that's what I loved. And then they pushed it, you know. I don't know. I like it, but I don't know.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot I was missing.
Yeah,
you're hard to impress, dude.
Well, yeah, and I think I brought up on the first time I was at Shockwaves. There was this batshit Deep Blue Sea 2 that were teasing for a second, and then they ended up making it as Malibu Shark Attack. Took the same story where, like a complex falls into the ocean, and then you're like an apartment complex, so the sharks invade
an apartment complex.
Yeah, so it's
like half on the water. It's also the plot of Sharks in Venice, which I've seen.
I was going to say, also, Bait 3D goes into that realm.
Yes, it does.
Which is actually really fun.
Great. Yeah, that movie's really fun.
3D's awesome.
Though I've never seen it in 3D. As in,
we watched that in 3D.
Oh, okay.
They've come over and seen it.
I need to watch that.
And didn't you guys come over? I know you did for sure. Shark Night 3D?
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, Shark Night is a trip. I remember seeing that in the theater.
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, it was probably a double feature. I had to order that from the UK as the only way to get it in 3D. And then I was so heartbroken that the rap song was cut out.
Oh, no.
So then I went on YouTube and showed Steve I've never seen Steve react more negatively. I showed him the rap song from the end credits, and he's like, I can't handle this. This is terrible.
That broke me. I tried to watch that. I was telling his co-host, I tried to watch that movie Food Fight that cost like $70 million, and it's just Charlie the Tuna.
Oh, that movie is rough.
Yeah, that one broke me.
It's an animated movie from like the late aughts, but it looks like an N64 game.
Wow. Yeah. Never
it's like $80 million.
If you ever want to see a movie fight? Charlie Tuna.
Who else does he fight? Does he fight like the Twinkie really guy or any other?
Yeah, they're in it. They're all in it. The pickle guy, the
Mr. Peanut?
Is Mr. Peanut? But I know the guy,
pickle guy from like Vlasic? No, Vlasic is a store.
Yeah, he's in it. The stock. Yeah, so I'm good at handling bad movies, but that one broke me.
Yeah. This is like a Mandela effect.
Yeah, look at that cover.
I do not remember this movie whatsoever. Look at this thing.
Oh, because there's a crazy story behind it. It's this crazy disaster.
Oh, yeah. Aunt Jemima.
But there's a dog that looks like fucking Indiana Jones, and he's got a blonde woman.
He's like a ripoff of the crime dog.
I have no recollection of this.
It's just like a McGruff.
But the animation looks like I'm playing Sims.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. Total PS2.
Oh, that is the Twinkie guy. And the stork from Vlasic.
Yeah.
And Aunt Jemima.
That's where all the money went.
That's a thing.
We encourage you to use Google while you listen to this part.
And you can watch it.
Yeah. Or go look up the making of it. You'll be so fascinated.
The California Raisins.
Yep.
Whoa. One nice thing about podcasting for years, like this, I think we've been doing this for about 7 years, or back when you were on it first was probably about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And when you came on Pure Cinema, we did Ripoffs, and that was probably 3 years ago, and that was a great one. But what's so nice about doing this for a long time, and it kind of talks to why we're here, is we will talk about something that has been trapped on VHS, and it will be it'll be our passion. For you, I'll never forget, for you was the one that was, what's the Aliens ripoff? The Turkish Aliens? That you gave some love to, that now has come out from Severin.
Oh, you're talking about Shocking Dark.
So what's funny is you'll hear about a movie and you'll go, oh, it's only available on VHS on YouTube. And then 2 or 3 years later of talking about these movies. Exactly.
To do the trapped on VHS.
The gems are coming out.
I still have a list.
But if Spookies.
It was only a couple months ago that I spoke about Spookies thinking it would never get seen. And I had watched on YouTube thinking that's never getting to Blu-ray. And then like a month later, it was on Blu-ray. And you're like Night Beast, where it's just, you know, put up like, so I think there is something really magical about this thing. If you stick around long enough, everything ends up there. But some things that should be are still not.
And yeah. I will say that a lot of the ones, the kind of my go-tos, like I always put Paper House on my list. Yeah, like that's just like an amazing film. That
seems to be streaming a lot though now.
But
luckily.
They're streaming, yeah. So like even within that, I put The Keep, Blood Salvage, and Paper House on my list for today, and all of them are streaming on Amazon
Prime.
Streaming?
Dude, Blood Salvage looks great.
I love it. That's such a fun movie.
I had to watch the shittiest version for so long.
I know. I still have my VHS, and then I watched it on Prime when I realized it a couple days ago, and I put it on the background while I was working on Monday, and I was like, this looks really nice. It's just a pleasant revisit. Not exactly a flawless movie, but it's fun.
But let me ask you guys, does VHS, like despite what we're talking about, but does VHS still play any role in your life now? Like, no, is there still things you will watch on VHS because you have to?
Mine, it's become an increased role.
Okay.
Built like my garage from the 80s.
Yeah, because my girlfriend and I moved in together and got a house in Burbank. And it's funny because I grew up, you know, where there's snow, and anywhere there's snow, you have basements. And so I'm always kind of confused with people who grew up without basements. Like, where'd you guys hang out?
Garage.
Yeah, garage is what it turned out. Nobody parks their car in their garage in LA. And even though we have two TV rooms, because my girlfriend's also obsessed with movies.
Sonic money.
This was pre-Sonic.
He was rich before
Sonic.
Well,
that's the other – I got a 50-inch TV at Best Buy for $199.
Wow.
We're living in a crazy
Wonderful time.
But a garage was now dedicated. Our friend Caleb gave us – he was just getting rid of it. It's an old tube TV that has both a DVD and a VCR built into it. So, you know,
I've got that one, yeah.
Some real serious machinery. Yeah, just like two dumpy couches. And I feel that's the way to watch VHS with all the fun of an old garbage
you
TV.
You did the proper thing and you put a rug and a space heater. And those are the two important components to having the cool room in the garage.
But the answer is I now watch maybe too much VHS.
Well, there are a few movies that are ruined by being HD. Like you'll watch it and just go, I didn't need to see that. Like those pores, that crispness. Yeah. It's not all movies because most I do like the way it kind of resurrects them. But there are a couple movies I've seen where I'm like, nope, it actually would have been better if I couldn't see fucking this thing.
Yeah, I will always have my VCR just because there are certain movies that and a lot of them are kind of even kids movies. Like I used to watch, I'm assuming you guys did not, but there was this line of kids movies when I was a kid called Unicorn Tales. And it was these little like musical numbers where they all had these lessons and they were all about unicorns, but never has it been released anywhere else. And I will keep everything just to keep watching Unicorn Tales. But that said, there's a number of other movies that never made it past VHS and even concert tapes. Like my, one of my faves growing up was Big Time by Tom Waits.
Oh yeah.
And that's that video has never made it past VHS. And so I still have my original clamshell. So,
performance art. Yeah, that's great.
I used to collect those. I had like Primus, all the Chili Peppers, Beastie Boys. I still have them all. But I think you're right. A lot of those never made it to.
What's like a famous Jane's Addiction one?
The Gift. Huge amounts of like my film love from The Gift because it was just shot. It was just about his girlfriend dying of a heroin overdose. And it was shot in their apartment. Yeah, he directed it with Casey Nicolai was his girlfriend's name. And so it was mostly just like home movies of her surfing. This weird Hispanic wedding that they did involving roosters. There was a rooster in it. And then scenes of him decorating her body with flowers for as she died. And then at the end, the paramedics show up and they're like, looks like she died of a heroin overdose, but she's beautiful. And so, and it just details a lot of it is just kind of like spoken word of him talking about recovery and ODing and trying to get back and clean and things like that. And it was really good. Most of it being black and white, if memory serves. And so I loved it. It was like a huge impact on me.
He gets arrested at the ending because he decorates his wife.
He decorated, like desecrated the body.
So that's the whole ending of him cursing out the cops, getting arrested.
Very Pharrell. Yeah. Like at this point, I feel like because we're living in this great Blu-ray boutique boom, it almost feels like they're just like Severin and all these guys are just like trolling the bottom or dredging the bottom of the ocean and just finding all this crazy stuff and making it look better than it probably has any right to.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I guess not everyone has one, but if you have an all region player, I feel like even just something like, well, it's not out in America, but it's like if it's in Germany, you can just buy it from someone in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Like even Paper House, I have an absolutely beautiful release of, but I think it is German. Or
like, cause I was just so proud of myself when I finally found a 35 millimeter print of Brian Yuzna's Necronomicon.
Yeah.
And like the week that we were screening it, I mean, it was still a great sold out screening, but the week we were screening it, a Diablo DVD or what is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. Diabolic.
Announced, they're like, oh yeah, now you can buy this like super awesome, great looking, restored German Blu-ray.
It's Ryan
like,
picked up.
Yeah.
And I think I posted about it the night you had your screen. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
Thanks, Ryan. But so for me, it's more, I mean, it's why Slashback is so great. It's kind of, it's an aesthetic. It's the fun of looking at the artwork and just something about like when Rob came over, it's like he brought some VHSs. I brought some VHSs. And you just like have a stack there and you kind of like,
I really missed that experience. Like literally it's just we both threw out a bunch of tapes out and looked at the covers and that was it. We had no idea what was within. We don't know the budget. We don't know what we're going for. Of course we picked the first great cover with a zombie face in it.
And it was a lie.
We were suckered 15 minutes in. We're like, these two old British ladies are still talking to each other. I think we made a mistake.
Because they're objects too. Like that's the thing I think we forget.
There's kind of,
you can love an object. You can pick it up in your hand and feel some way about it. Not just the film inside it. You like those ones you got tricked multiple times that we talked about a lot because the cover looks so good and you turn the back, you go, oh fuck, I got
it. Damn you, Body Shop.
And then, exactly. You watch it again. And it's,
well, you talk yourself into what was it after Underwater?
What's the other one? Deep Star Six.
Deep Star Six.
Just like that cover.
It's
I'd watched
fun.
So many. No, it's so boring.
Oh.
And I've watched it so many times because the cover's so good. And every time it's like
yet,
a talkie.
Fucking House by the Cemetery is golden.
Oh, House by the Cemetery.
How many times did you look at that Future Kill VHS?
Oh my God. I own Future Kill on VHS.
Well, what was one called? The Club? With like a the devil
so
looking
that,
guy.
I
hated the film, but loved watching the cover every time.
I didn't mind the movie because it was about like this psychic demonic entity who would like infiltrate gangs of kids at school and convince them to kill themselves.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember
cover
that one?
So well.
It's 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching Scarlatta walk over to pick up Iron Master.
Oh, nice.
Which is
that's a great cover.
Right up your alley. Yeah.
So metal.
So metal indeed.
I think it's a little bit like vinyl. It'd be different. Obviously, vinyl's better sound quality than VHS is. Picture quality, but it's the same thing where it's like, I know if you're a serious audiophile, you probably have the craziest vinyl setup, and they say that that actually is like the best sounding music you can listen to, but I don't really feel like I have the ear capacity for that. And my setup's just like, okay. For me, vinyl, it's the fun of holding it and looking at it and putting it down and the needle and flipping it over. And I feel the same way about VHS now. It's like part of an overall, like I don't do it much by myself at all. Yeah. I invite people over and we do it. It was fun. Rob never got to do it because he was allergic to cats and my old house didn't have an outside place. But I used to live within walking distance of Eddie Brandt's, which people don't know, is in Burbank or maybe North Hollywood.
It's technically North Hollywood, but by two blocks.
It's one of the last like video stores and it's mostly VHS. Mm-hmm. And just go there and be like, I don't know what this is. And a lot of their stuff is bootleg. So it's like a store-bought VHS with the sticker on the side and someone wrote on it.
So I've told the story before on the show, but that's how I discovered the 70s Dead of Night because I went there to rent the 1940s. Yeah, I went there to rent the 1940s Dead of Night and I asked them for it and they were like, I don't know, I got this unlabeled thing that says Dead of Night. Here, take it. And I went home and I was like, well, this isn't what I'm looking for, but it's Ed Begley Jr. in a car and I'm kind of in now, so let's do this. And and it's fun.
And that since has come out, I think, on Blu-ray.
It has.
Or DVD.
Yeah, I think it was DVD.
For me, the one pocket I miss from the video generation that has not transitioned to DVD and Blu-ray yet is the countless sequels. And in particular, I'm a huge fan of Scanner Cop and Scanners the Showdown, which are the two Scanner Cop movies. And at the same time, also, they made like four Relentless movies.
Yeah,
like there's the original William Lustig one, and then Leo Rossi's character became the lead of this series where everyone, he just went after a serial killer. So the second one was like a Russian hitman. The third one was William Forsythe. Like, so he always had like really crazy serial killers that he went after. And they're not exactly like the first one, obviously, because that's Bill Lustig, but that was a trend where they could afford that. They could afford to make, make two or three more of those and just put it straight to video.
Let's make 12 witchcraft movies.
Some of those are still only on VHS.
Well,
most of them
is,
have evolved.
I was going to say, I mean, like, I think carrying the torch these days is Universal Home Entertainment because I think that between them and a couple other studios, you know, there are like countless Bring It On movies. this. Like, there are more Bring It On movies than I ever knew until I actually met with someone, an exec over at Uni Home, and they were like, oh, yeah, this is our 12th Bring It On. And I was like,
12?
Really? How are they? How
they
are
they, American Pie.
American Pie. I mean, like, they're still mining Tremors.
Yeah.
They're still mining Chucky. You know, they did a sequel to The Car.
I just saw that pop up, and I was like, what is that?
Yeah, they made a sequel to The Car, which is insane to me.
Like, you know, recently?
Yeah.
Within the last year.
Oh, wow. It just pops up, and I saw new artwork, like, this weekend, and I was like, what is that movie?
Yeah, it's a recent direct video.
Guillermo has The Car, from what I hear. Guillermo del Toro has The Car. Right?
That's so random. Lucky
it's weird.
What about you, Steven? Because I don't know much about your history with VHS. Does this still matter to you, or is it more just the nostalgia now?
I still have them. I have them in a box. But I used to have a VHS all set up, but now with the new big flat screens, I don't really have them hooked up. But I have them. I still keep. If I see one, like I stumbled across like a year ago, The Jar on VHS, and I bought it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fun!
Yeah, so yeah. I bought Antonio Margheriti's Indiana Jones. He did a couple Indiana Jones ripoffs and Hunters of the Golden Cobra. It's the only way I have the VHS. I haven't watched it yet. I'm dying to watch it, but. You know,
I think that's part of the fun too, the like hunt to find stuff. And just anytime you're at some thrift store, if you see they have a little VHS, or granted it's mostly, you know, like Titanic and probably not Jerry Maguire anymore now that everything is terrible. It's been buying up the entire world's copy of
Jerry Maguire on VHS.
Are there any that mean a lot to you that still haven't come to disc that you're, I mean, obviously we all have something that we are still itching for, but is there any for you that you're dying to get on disc?
It's not horror, but I was a huge Beastie Boys fan growing up, and there was a movie called Tougher Than Leather with Run DMC.
Oh, which I just watched on VHS.
Yeah, I have it on VHS. Yes.
Written, directed, and starring Rick Rubin.
Yes. But it feels like a gritty 70s movie. Yeah. But yeah, I have it, and I loved it because the Beastie Boys was in it for 1 second. Yeah. And I loved hip-hop growing up, so that one I'm shocked. Yes. Never seen it.
And that's kind of, it's less things where it's like, oh, this is so good. Because again, we were talking about, it's all on streaming. Like, The Keep would be amazing to have, like, a restored Blu-ray, but you can still watch it.
I haven't tested this theory, but what I've heard is, but The Keep is streaming on iTunes, and it's a decent print.
Oh, really?
It's streaming on Amazon as well.
There's a DVD somewhere in the world.
Well, there's an Australian DVD that just came out. Yeah. But I mean, like, from my understanding, the transfer is like VHS quality.
Well, it's not a transfer. Michael Mann reshot it on digital and then uploaded it. It just doesn't look the same for him. Yeah, you know, sadly.
But from my understanding, it's on iTunes and you could buy it and it's a decent print. So I don't know.
As far as what I really would, though, like to get, restored or just put on Blu-ray, mainly because my VHS looks so bad that it's like hard to see, is I'm a big fan of like When Animals Attack movies. That's why we were at the pack at the new BAV.
Yeah.
There is a mid 80s baboon movie called In the Shadow of Kilimanjaro.
Oh, yes.
Not to be confused with the Gregory Peck movie, Snows of Kilimanjaro, starring John Rhys-Davies Timothy Bottoms, the one from the last picture show, and Irene Miracle from in Argento's Inferno. Yeah. And it's just a pretty straightforward set in Africa, baboons attacking like a mining operation. But it's just, there's these amazing shots where I don't really know how they did them, where there's just like this almost like tidal wave of baboons running down like a hill towards a cast. And anyone who's seen Chakma, it's like, baboons are dangerous. Yeah. Like, there's actors in the show. But it's like, it's so blurry that I'm almost like, if I saw this in high def, is this like horrible animation? Like, are these not real baboons in the distance? Dude, but that one would be fun.
That movie drove me crazy because I was really lucky. My dad hooked me up with like 3 different video stores I could ride my bike to, but none of them had that movie. And I'd go to other video stores and see it, and like, why didn't you at my video store? And I've never seen it to this day, but I'd never forget that video cover.
And does anyone remember the Jeff Goldblum movie, Mr. Frost?
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Never seen it though.
Is that a Dean Koontz thing?
I've never seen that.
You'd probably
he's playing a serial killer.
It's kind of slow. Well, it's like it begins with him sort of almost intentionally being caught by the cops in France, and there's like 30 or 40 bodies just buried in his garden.
Did you say Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah. Jeff Goldblum. Yeah. And he gets,
when he's got the mullet.
Yeah.
And he's mullet, and he's in an asylum, and he doesn't talk for like 2 years, and meanwhile the cop who arrested him is going full like Donald Pleasance obsessed with him. And then he meets, there's like a new female therapist at the hospital. I'm forgetting the actress's name. She plays, I always think of her as, she's the like horny neighbor from Edward Scissorhands.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That okay. character actress. Yeah. But like he connects with her and starts finally talking and he's like, I'm Satan. And then they just kind of just have like, it's a little slow because it's a very talky movie, but it's definitely one of those movies where I feel like it's got, because of Jeff Goldblum, it's just got that like curio factor that I feel people would be interested in watching.
It was an odd VHS cover. Wasn't it just his face?
Just his face.
Yeah. Yeah. And the title, but the title kind of grabs you because you don't know what that means. The Mr. Frost. Yeah. I remember that one. The one I always keep seeing David Gregory always say, got to put out The Black Room. I've been saying that one for years, and I don't know what the issue with that one is because it's a really interesting movie. But I watched one last night that I actually just noticed is on your piece of paper. This is one people had often talked about Trapped on VHS, and that is Dream Demon.
Oh, yeah.
By Harley Kickoff.
Yeah, that is on my list.
If you like Burt Reynolds, that's the director of Moon, which has to be shouted to be believed, and Battle Trek. But this movie was so weird because it's 1988. And if you told me that this had come out before the second after Hellraiser, I would have been like, it's more of, people online will talk about it as a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of reading.
It feels like Hellraiser.
But it's Hellraiser. It's British. It's like got the slabs of wood with the exact light coming, shining through and weird caverns through the house. But, but it was actually a really good movie. Like I watched this on YouTube last night, VHS quality. So it's the only place you can find it. And it's got Timothy Spall as one of the creepy guys, who's like a reporter trying to infiltrate. So it's basically this woman's about to get married and the opening scene is dream scene, where she's getting married to some guy. They're standing at the altar and then he gets mad at her and slaps her across the face. So she punches him and his head comes off and blood squirts all over the bridal gown.
It's an amazing set piece.
And you're like, holy shit, what is this movie? And where have you been all my life? And then it gets more bonkers than that. And so it's all these, the whole half the movie's dreams because it's Nightmare on Elm Street-ish, but it feels so much more like the sexual relationships of Hellraiser. And it's, so it's 88. So it's a year after Hellraiser and a couple years after Nightmare. And so you're just like, what is this movie? Again, I have no clue why it's not out. It seemed to be pretty well respected by England.
I saw this a while ago, like back in college. I rented this when I worked at the video store and had always been like, oh yeah, that's a great movie. And then it didn't even dawn on me until a couple of years ago when we were doing an article for Blumhouse that this had never come out anywhere. And then it was one of those that I now constantly, every single time I make a list, it's always on the list. And I always put a question mark under it because I don't even think like you can find the VHS anymore. Like I looked on Amazon today and I'm glad
we're going to look around the store.
I
after
would never say I'm glad it's on YouTube, but I mean like I couldn't even find it on Amazon today.
Is Pin on DVD and Blu-ray?
Pin is, it was on DVD at one point, it but has been long out of print.
Well, that's a whole other thing.
Pin's on, piece of gold. I have the laser disc for Pin now.
What's that?
I just said that, like that there was that whole phase, the early wave of DVDs that are now out of print.
The one that I always go to, in addition to Dream Demon, is Blue Monkey from 1988.
Oh, that's a crazy
movie. It's so fun. This one, I can't even really dissect the plot. It's set in a hospital for the most part. There's a lot of mutations.
No monkeys, right?
No monkeys. No monkeys. There's plant insect beasts. Really, really hyper 80s gory, really stylized and beautiful creature work at the end. It's just
That's one I rented.
Who directed that? Albert Brandt and someone?
That's a fun one.
Yeah, it's a real fun one. I don't
or
even
a Canadian
recall.
Director maybe or something. Yeah.
And so that's kind of the one that I'm always like, man, I wish they would come out with that because
it must
I still,
be a rights thing because that feels very like Severin.
It feels so Severin or Vinegar Syndrome just because it is so over the top and kind of wonderfully gory. And then there's two from Australia that I own, both of which, well, one's a little bit better than the other one. Stones of Death from 1988 and Allison's Birthday from 1981.
Allison's Birthday's good, yeah.
And I've never met anybody who has seen either of them. You've seen Allison's
Birthday. Awesome. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So yeah, both of those. Yeah. Allison's Birthday is better than Stones of Death, but I own them both on VHS and they're not available on anything else. But Allison's Birthday is really good. About this girl who, it's her birthday and she and her friends decide to use this Ouija board. And she somehow summons something and discovers that she's kind of being stalked by this Celtic cult. And it gets weird from there. But it's kind of like a coming of age womanhood story with a lot of horror elements.
So, just throwing it back just for people, when we mentioned Blue Monkey, director of Killer Party, Funeral Home, and all the Goosebumps, like kids movies.
Oh, wow.
So that's the guy who did Blue Monkey. Oh, my gosh.
William Pruitt. I knew a name I'd heard, yeah.
I'm looking at the Dream Demon VHS on eBay right now, and the pricing ranges from $10 to $219.95. But one of the VHS tapes has this wonderful thing on it. There's like a banner over the VHS that says "Scarifying, made for theatrical feature."
Scarified.
Are you scarified?
But it is weird that, I mean, given how long we've all done this and look for the deep cuts, I think it's pretty crazy when you even run across something that you haven't heard of before.
Yeah.
It was like Meet the Applegates never came on.
That is an oddball
movie. I was
going to
bring that one up because that was one I just watched out of VHS night in my garage.
Oh, really?
And that's very of its time period of that, like, kind of early 90s, late 80s, where they were making these like R-rated movies or basically toned like kids movies.
There was the Roach one, Joe's Apartment.
This
was kind of right around the same time, I remember. Yeah, and it was these like our kids ones.
They held that back and they kept changing the title.
I think the title on the VHS I watched is different than what's on screen. Because that's about, speaking of Ed Begley Jr., there's a whole civilization in like the Amazon of like giant bugs and like, you know, they're chopping down the forest or whatever. And they're like, we got to stop humanity. So Ed Begley Jr. and some other bugs like put on human suits and move to some small town.
It's a prequel to Mimic.
So he can get a job at a nuclear power plant so they can steal the technology and basically like melt it down and kill humanity. Yeah. It's such a like tonally...
Kill all humans.
Over the place movie. And there's this whole dumb runner with Dabney Coleman, who's their like general, who's actually a female bug, but is in Dabney Coleman's body. And they just keep cutting to him in like a different location as he's working his way from the Amazon to whatever small American town it is. And people keep finding out about their secret. And then they like cocoon them and put them in the like attic. And I think it's Kevin Yeager or someone did all the effects. So like the practical effects are all awesome. It's just such a dopey movie. It's weird.
I have vivid memories of watching this and My Stepmother Was an Alien, Dan Aykroyd, on the same night, back to back.
That's a sexy one.
Yeah. Tana Dixon, I think. Kim Basinger. Kim Basinger.
What about you, cool. Rob Ryan? Any before we wrap? Any VHS trapped on VHS thing that you'd like to see free? Knowing that David Gregory could be listening.
I see Demon War.
Yes, I just saw that recently and thought it was really
George
cool.
George Kennedy would be cool.
Playing Trivial Pursuit. George Kennedy.
And there's one called Summer Camp Nightmare.
Oh, Summer Camp Nightmare. That's Penelope Spheres, right?
Yeah, it's not really a horror movie, but I just remembered it was kind of freaked me out. I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
I have it, if you want to check it back out.
I don't have many desires, because I know that...
a whole story here.
Because I have a whole story here, and I also know that in time... Vinegar syndrome will probably
be
put on.
It's going to be vinegar.
So
there's a lot of hope now.
And I mean, even with...
You'll have to go through a lot of films to get to that one. You
mentioned Penelope Spheres' Summer Camp Nightmare. Her other one, Dudes. I remember one. I have a signed VHS of that, which I got signed.
That one...
John Cryer.
Oh, the John Cryer one. Okay, I was thinking of something else.
I learned about that from Zach Carlson's Destroy All Movies book. Uh-huh. There's a great still, them like on little bicycles or motorcycles or something.
It's a fun movie. Yeah. I always enjoyed it, but I heard the rights got held up because it has so much music. It's like a really, really heavily soundtracked thing, and that there were some rights issues with the soundtrack when it moves from one format to another.
Yeah, it opens with the Vandals and stuff like that. That's a fun punk rock movie.
Yeah.
The Brain is another one. The one that's Screaming Mad George. Is it out?
It's out on Blu-ray.
The Brain came out. Behind.
One of the best openings ever.
Eventually, it'll all make its way onto the new format.
Is Elves out?
Elves is not out.
Elves is not.
That's a fun
one. I quit smoking because of that
problematic movie.
No, like I used to smoke, and then I watched that movie on VHS and was suddenly like, Dan Haggerty, you have changed my life, and I don't think I need to smoke anymore. So thank you.
Wow. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up here at Slashback Video. Gentlemen, thanks for coming
Ryan's got to build some shelves still.
Some more construction.
We got some meals, food.
Oh, okay.
Guys, thanks for coming on. Where can our listeners find you?
You can just find me on Instagram, Josh_S_Miller. You can also find us, Best Movies Never Made.
That's what I was getting at.
And also on Twitter, it's at Never Made Film.
Oh.
And we post a lot of especially Steve finds some great like unused concept art from both movies we talk about and just anything.
then people think we're talking about those other movies.
Yeah.
All bad posting it. I'm like, oh, man.
And I'm excited to be on an episode of that show coming up in 2022, I believe.
Yes.
Right? And Joshua and long negotiation. Yeah.
We'll get you on. We got some ideas for Turek as well.
Cool.
Yes. And I'm sure both you two will be back.
Let's do it.
Whenever you want.
The Driller Killer is near, so we're going to wrap. Okay, but thank you all so much.
I'm down to see Flashback.
Fangoria and Blumhouse present Shockwaves. Shockwaves is a member of the Fangoria Podcast Network, hosted and produced by Rob Galuzzo, Elric Kane, Ryan Turek, and Rebecca McKendry. Sound recording, mixing, and editing by Ernie Hurtado. Music by Gregory S. Burkhart. Logo art and design by Aaron Crawford. For Fangoria, Dallas Sanier, Phil Nobile Jr., Jessica Sapp of Amer, Brandon Wynardi, Natasha Pacetta, and Rob Galuzzo.